Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Monday, March 2nd edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. Let's go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me here as we fire up a new week here on the program. One guest joins me on today's show. That is professional handicapper Ralph Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Unfortunately, Kyle Hunter out sick for today's show. Unable to join us. We send our best out to Kyle and hope he's feeling better here during what is a very, very busy time of the college basketball season. But in any event, we'll do the best we can here. I'll start things off with the Bettors Box, my MLB betting podcast. Got my five and fly segment for the National League East. We'll also update some of these spring training injury situations here on today's show. Then we'll chat with Ralph Michaels, like I said, of WagerTalk.com. We talk about the Atlantic Sun, the Big South, the Horizon, the Patriot, the Ohio Valley, and the Mountain West. All of those conference tournaments starting up here on either Tuesday or Wednesday. The Northeast Conference also starting up on Wednesday. And in fact, over at bangthebook.com, starting here this afternoon, once these offshores get off their asses and post some of these conference tournament futures prices, going to be posting all 32 conference tournament previews over at the website. So plenty for you to check out on the college basketball side. That is just the start of our March Madness content over at bangthebook.com. So of all 32 conference tournament previews, we'll have a bunch of previews for the NCAA tournament games, some betting thoughts for the NIT, CBI, and CIT as well. And of course, we'll be doing all that stuff right here on Bang the Book Radio also. Over at bangthebook.com, where we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information, not just college basketball, not just Major League Baseball, though I do encourage you to head on over there, check out my MLB betting guide, which you can find in free PDF form over at bangthebook.com or find over on Amazon for $4.99. You can also click through and go to the individual articles for each futures bet, futures preview as well. We've also got daily NHL, daily NBA, additional college basketball that's not March Madness related. We got soccer, golf, tennis, esports, NASCAR, you name it, we got it over at bangthebook.com. Head on over there. Make sure you check it all out. Finally, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB and the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. I want to let you know that we're doing a full regular week here this week, but then for the next 2 weeks at least, and maybe the next 3 weeks, only going Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday with Bang the Book Radio. Next week, we'll have a ton of conference tournament games Thursday and Friday. Our guests are going to want to be betting on those. So we're not going to have shows on Thursday or Friday for the next couple of weeks. Now, that being said, I'll probably wind up doing the Bettors Box on Thursdays, my MLB betting podcast. We'll have a Monday-Thursday format with that once we get through the college basketball season. But if you want full shows with guests, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, over the next 2 weeks, this week will be a full-on show. But the next 2 weeks, we'll just be doing Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday there with that. If you want more of my content, head on over to WagerTalk.com or WagerTalk TV on YouTube. I was in town last week, did a bunch of videos, did some of my favorite season win total write-ups, did a video with Brian Leonard on betting spring training baseball, also did a video about ERA, FIP, and XFIP. So good stuff over there through our friends over at Wager Talk. I also hopped on Dave Koken's show, so thanks to Dave. Did a show with Brian Blessing. Thanks to Brian, who, of course, joins me every Tuesday on the program. I hopped on VSiN for an hour with Brady Cannon and Wes Reynolds. So got the word out about the MLB betting guide. Got a lot of positive feedback, a lot of attaboys. Thanks to each and every one of you that has downloaded it, has bought it on Amazon, has followed along with the work that I did last week out in Las Vegas, cross-promoting the guide. It was a lot of fun. I guess it's nice to get back to normal, although Vegas is such an enchanting town, man. I miss it already. But in any event, thanks to everybody out there in Las Vegas that helped me out with promoting the guide. And thanks to all of you who listen here to Bang the Book Radio and have followed up with my preseason Major League Baseball betting content. And if you want the show notes from these Bettors Box segments, adam@bangthebook.com, the way to get on the list for those. All right, let's do it. The five and fly segment here for the National League East. And we start with the Atlanta Braves. 5 minutes on all five teams here within the division. The Braves season win total 90.5 here for this team. They have won back-to-back National League East division titles. The season win total for this team is coming down a little bit. It is juiced to the under. You've got a low Pecota projection for the Atlanta Braves. And they did overachieve last year per their alternate standings metrics. Their actual record was 6 games better than their Pythagorean win-loss record, 7 games better than their base runs record, and 8 games better than their third-order win percentage. So there are reasons to be concerned about the Braves. Their season win total, in fact, falls right in line with those alternate standings metrics of Pythagorean win-loss, base runs, and third-order win percentage. But last year, they had a low Pecota projection as well. It's something that they guess, you know, I guess that they can kind of do a little bit here. So far in spring training, they've avoided bad news with Freddie Freeman. They've got some good hitters in Ronald Acuna Jr., Ozzie Albies, Dansby Swanson is a good enough bat with good enough defense at shortstop to play pretty well. They've got some very good guys coming up through the minor league system. A couple of outfielders, Drew Waters, Christian Pash. They've got a lot of talent here within this team. Yes, they lost Josh Donaldson, who had big numbers for them last year. But they add Marcelo Ozuna, and Marcelo Ozuna had elite contact metrics last season, just didn't really have the results to go with it. So you wonder if Ozuna, a little bit of a positive regression guy here for this season. They've got some young starters with great stuff and great depth. Mike Soroka, Max Fried. Soroka may be something of a negative regression guy here coming into this season. Max Fried is a positive regression guy. As far as I'm concerned, his home run to fly ball percentage should get better. Both guys should see increases in the strikeout department. They've got prospects like Ian Anderson. He's a good-looking starting pitching prospect. Maybe Tuki Toussaint, more of a fit for the bullpen, but he's a guy with some starter upside. Sean Newcomb, the same thing. Mike Foltynewicz was very good in 2018, battled some injuries in 2019, and, you know, as we know, didn't pitch particularly well in the postseason. But this is a team with a lot of depth, and I've talked about this a lot when it pertains to season win totals, but you need depth, man. Injuries are going to happen. Injuries are going to be a reality. And the teams at the end of the year that go over their season win totals either stayed remarkably healthy or they had a lot of depth and they had a lot of guys contribute. You know, I use the Indians as an example just because it's very, very easy here. They lose Mike Clevinger for 2 months. They trade away Trevor Bauer. They lose Corey Kluber for most of the season. How do they go over their season win total? They're starting pitching depth. Aaron Civale came up and was a brilliant pitcher for them. Shane Bieber took the big leap. Adam Plutko was serviceable at times. Jeffrey Rodriguez had his flashes. Zach Plesac was very good as well. You've got to have depth. If you want to overcome a projection, or just at the very least overcome injuries, you have to have depth, and the Braves have depth. Yeah, they lose a guy like Josh Donaldson, but they replace him with a guy like Johan Camargo, who was very good in 2018, not so good last year, not getting regular playing time, but that's a guy that has some upside. Austin Riley, growing pains last year, but a guy that could step in and possibly play very, very well for this team. You want to look for teams that can withstand injuries. You want to look for teams that have a lot of talented players and a lot of guys that have, you know, league average types of floors. To me, the Braves are a team like that. And last year, they rebuilt the bullpen. You know, they did sign Will Smith here this offseason, but they acquired Chris Martin. They acquired Shane Green. And yeah, Shane Green wasn't very good once he got to Atlanta. But what happens when you get a deeper bullpen is that you start pushing your good relievers back a little bit. You can start using those guys in the sixth and seventh innings as opposed to the eighth and ninth innings. So what happens when you upgrade your bullpen is you strengthen the entire unit because you start putting guys in positions to succeed in lower leverage types of spots. So a guy like Luke Jackson should bounce back. He was pretty good in the first half last year, bottomed out in the second half. But that's a guy that should bounce back because now he's not pitching the eighth inning. Now he's not pitching the ninth inning with guys like Will Smith and Chris Martin. So these are really important developments for teams as they upgrade their bullpens. The Braves upgraded their bullpen. I like the depth at starting pitching. I like the depth of the position players. I'm against the grain here with Atlanta. This is not a bet for me, but this is a contest or a pool pick to take over 90.5 with the Atlanta Braves. We go to the Miami Marlins here. Their season win total, 64.5. And I will tell you right now that I'm getting a little bit worried about my underpick here with the Miami Marlins, because we are seeing some steam on the over a little bit here with Miami. Now, their Pecota projection up in the low 70s. And again, Pecota does drive a lot of the narrative when it comes to these season win total betting opportunities. And the thing about the Marlins is this. The upside is pretty low for this team. Now, the pitching staff could be very, very good. But this starting lineup, I call this the Island of Misfit Toys offense, because they've signed a lot of rental free agent players. Corey Dickerson is a 2-year contract, but they've got a lot of guys that are very flawed. You know, they're still useful in a practical sense, but they're very flawed. Matt Joyce, platoon player. Corey Dickerson, platoon player with some injury baggage with him. Francisco Cervelli, good on base percentage, does not hit for a lick of power. Matt Kemp, platoon guy on the opposite side, hits lefties, doesn't hit righties. Jonathan VR, speed guy, BABIP guy, you know, you kind of wonder year to year what you're going to get from him. Jesus Aguilar, same thing, you wonder what you're going to get from him. But this is a Miami offense that was among the worst in baseball last season in just about every statistical category. Now they supplant guys like a Brian Anderson with guys, and a Garrett Cooper, with guys that actually have track records, where we've got a pretty good idea of what we're going to get. The problem is they're just flawed. They're just guys that you are trying to find their way into a pennant race. They're platoon guys. Some of these guys are bad defensive players, like a Matt Kemp. He's a terrible outfielder. So there's that. You know, these are guys that go to Miami because they're not very good, or they're decent, but they have a big hole. So what the hope is that you play for Miami for a while, have a good 3 or 4 months, then get traded out of there, get put into a pennant race where teams are just kind of looking to fill some of those platoon situations. So that's what the Marlins are looking to do here with this offense and sort of rebuild up the farm system a little bit. And the nice thing, too, is that when we get to the trade deadline and they start looking to acquire some of these players, they're going to want position player guys. They feel like they've got a pretty good young core of starting pitchers. So maybe they get some guys with a little bit of upside for the second half. So I am getting a little bit worried about taking the Miami under for my 2020 MLB betting guide. But at the same time, this team will look a lot different in July than it's currently constructed. The reason why I'm ultimately worried about the under is that this pitching staff is pretty decent. You know, Sandy Alcantara, 296 WOBA against in the second half, a guy with great contact metrics against, just hasn't really had the success, hasn't really had the numbers to back it up. Caleb Smith misses a ton of bats, but he's rarely healthy. Jordan Yamamoto is a fly ball guy. He had a lower ERA and a higher xFIP last season, so maybe you fade him on the road, buy him at home a little bit. Pablo Lopez, the under-the-hood metrics, suggests some upside. You know, if you look at his pure velocity and movement statistics over at StatCast, he's mentioned with guys like Steven Strasburg, like Aaron Nola. The difference is Lopez doesn't locate as well as those guys do. He's got the raw stuff, but will it come together? That's the big question for a guy like Pablo Lopez. So you've got upside with this Marlins rotation. You really, truly do. You've got a park factor that's conducive to a better pitching staff and a lesser offense. They are moving the fences in a little bit in center field and right center, but I don't think that's going to increase offense a whole lot in this division. So you got a pretty good pitching staff. You got an offense that should be better, but this is still a Marlins team I think has a long way to go. There are still 3 very good teams in this division, in the Braves, Nationals, and the Mets. I think Miami is a team that still comes up short more often than not. I do think that they will be better, and maybe they do go over this 64.5 number, but I think the Pecota projection is high on this team. I think it's one of those scenarios where, you know, last year their alternate standings metrics were in the low 60s. They probably fall in a similar range to that. I don't think this is a team with 70 win upside as Pecota would suggest. But I do think this pitching staff is pretty good. I think this is a team that we can bet on at home in certain situations. I don't think I would like them on the road a whole lot in a lot of cases, except for with a guy like Caleb Smith that has the capability of missing a lot of bats. So I do lean under here, but the over steam is concerning to me. This is not a deep team at all, and I do wonder what they look like in July after the Major League Baseball trade deadline. Next up here is the New York Mets. 86.5, the season win total for the Metropolitans here. I'm going to say this right now up front. A healthy New York Mets team wins the National League East. This is my favorite team from an upside standpoint in the National League East. Now, why haven't I bet their season win total yet? Well, they got to stay healthy. This is a Mets team that year in and year out deals with a ton of injuries. Brandon Nimmo's gone to the cardiologist a few times. It seems like he's okay, but that's a guy that only played, I believe, 69 games last season. Michael Conforto, he seems to be in and out of the trainer's room. Jed Lowry missed almost all of last year. Jeff McNeil, who had that big breakout season last year for the Mets, he's the guy that got hurt at the tail end of last year. You wonder about him. You wonder about his ability to stay healthy. But if you like consistency, this lineup is mostly the same. 9 of the 11 guys with the most plate appearances for the Mets are back in the mix. Now, I am expecting a little bit of power regression from a guy like Pete Alonso, but the others should be better and should be healthier. You know, the Mets making some changes to their training staff. That's probably a good idea for them. I like a guy like J.D. Davis. He had very, very good contact metrics last year. Robinson Cano, he was in the 82nd percentile in exit velocity and the 87th percentile in hard hit percentage. So Cano is a bounce back guy. Davis is a good hitter. Alonso still would be a very good hitter. Don't get me wrong. I just don't see 50 home runs for him. McNeil with the breakout year, Conforto and Nimmo, both guys that are very, very good. You know, Brandon Nimmo is a guy that walks a ton. And that's the thing about this lineup. They walk a ton. They hit balls hard. They've got a good amount of power. They've got some pretty decent depth, at least as far as position player guys go. I like this offense. I think if this Mets offense stays healthy, this is a top 10 caliber offense. And I never would have thought that with Citi Field, because Citi Field, by and large, not a very good hitter's park overall, but last year played a lot better for lefties than it had in the past. Just a better offensive squad here for the Mets. And that does create a little bit more upside for this team. Now, you got a new manager in Luis Rojas. You've got a new pitching coach in Jeremy Hefner. I think these are both good things for the Mets. I don't think Mickey Callaway was a good fit. I think Mickey Callaway is more of a pitching coach than a manager. The thing about Callaway is this, and I saw this with the Indians when he was there. He can really elevate elite pitchers. He can maximize the potential of elite pitchers. It's not a coincidence that Jacob DeGrom was so good with Callaway there. I think the problem is, I don't know if it's laziness or the message or what it is for Callaway. I think the problem is getting the mid-level guys to perform up to their capabilities is something that's a little bit more difficult for him. So I think when you've got a guy like a Marcus Stroman, you've got a guy like a Steven Matz, I don't think those are guys that Callaway can work as well with as he can with guys like Jacob DeGrom. And maybe even to a degree, a Noah Syndergaard type. Now, he did help Zach Wheeler to some new levels, and Wheeler, of course, getting the big payday from the Phillies. But I think Jeremy Hefner, a newer school approach, obviously, because he's 33 years old and a pitching coach already, I think that could help. You know, you're going to get league average types of innings from a guy like Rick Porcello here, and a lot of innings at that. Rick Porcello, very, very durable. I like this Mets team. I really, truly do. I think there's a lot of upside to this group, so long as they stay healthy. The bullpen should get better. You know, Edwin Diaz last year had elite-level strikeout metrics, as he always does, but the command just disappeared. He gave up a ton of home runs, in particular early on in the season. He's a bounce-back candidate to me. I don't think Edwin Diaz is done by any stretch of the imagination. Dellin Betances, great addition. If he's healthy, that power fastball, the power breaking ball, he's a good fit here with this Mets team. I think another good fit, Seth Lugo. I don't think people realize just how good Seth Lugo was last season for the Mets. Slowed down a little bit by a broken toe here in spring training. Not anything to really worry about. But he's a multi-inning guy, elite curveball, elite spin rate on his pitches. I like this Mets team. And they are a little bit depth shy. There is that. You know, they don't have a lot of high upside arms in the minor leagues. And that is a concern for me. And one of the reasons why I really want to wait and make sure this team gets through spring training healthy. But Mets over 86.5 may end up a bet for me. And I do like them to win the National League East as well. So you can get a pretty nice price on the Mets to win the East. Like, it's in that 265, 270, 300 range, something like that. I like this Mets team a lot if they're able to stay healthy and able to stay intact. The Philadelphia Phillies here, their season win total 85.5. Last year, they were a 500 team. Their season win total, if you remember, got steamed way up. In fact, it closed in the 89.5 range for the Phillies. I drank the Kool-Aid. They came nowhere close. 81-81, but -4 in Pythagorean win-loss, -6 in base runs, -7 in third order win percentage. So this is a Phillies team that played a lot more like a mid-70s win team. They weren't even as good as a 500 team as their record would suggest. And I don't think this team is a whole lot better. I know they add Zach Wheeler to the rotation. That's nice. He'll be a guy that can complement Aaron Nola a little bit. They add Didi Gregorius. Andrew McCutchen will be back probably by the start of May. But after Nola and Wheeler, then what? Jake Arrieta, 4.64 ERA, 4.89 FIP, 4.46 xFIP last year. He's done. He's no good. Velocity coming down. Hard hit rate going up. Bitching and moaning about everything with the team. He's done. Vince Velasquez, the ceiling is too low here. The command profile isn't good enough. I know Velasquez has some nice strikeout totals and stuff like that, but his command isn't good enough. I don't think that he's a guy you can rely on for 150 good innings. It's just not going to happen. Zach Eflin, not a big fan. Maybe a mildly high ceiling, but low K percentage, a lower swinging strike rate last year than he had the year before. Hector Neris, he's fine, but the rest of the bullpen, not very good. Sir Anthony Dominguez already hurt. Not a whole lot of depth in the minor leagues behind Alec Bohm. I don't like this Phillies team. And, you know, one of the things about these really strong divisions is that somebody has to lose. And it's kind of ironic because, you know, in the National League Central, where we have four win totals in the 80s, you know, much like we do here, you've got the Brewers down to 81.5. The Brewers are better than the Phillies. If someone offered me a prop bet of Brewers wins versus Phillies wins, I'm taking the Brewers. And if it was, you know, +4, like it is right now in the season win total market, I would love the Brewers. I don't understand why this Phillies win total hasn't cratered yet. Because when you're in a good division like this, something has to give. Somebody has to lose games. And we're seeing the Marlins win total built up. Now, maybe it's the Braves. Maybe that's the team that people are kind of selling the stock of here. It's the Phillies to me, man. I don't even think this is a 500 team. I think this is the worst pitching staff in the National League East. And keep in mind, the Miami Marlins are in this division. The Phillies are the worst pitching staff in the National League East. And yes, I think they upgrade at manager going from Gabe Kapler to a guy like Joe Girardi. I do think that that's an upgrade for them, but I don't think it's enough. You know, I don't like the composition of this pitching staff. The offense could be fine. I think that's a possibility. I think Rhys Hoskins could bounce back a little bit. Bryce Harper was very bad early in the year. He was very good in the second half. McCutchen comes back. Gregorius has something to prove here on a one-year deal. The offense could be fine. But where does a league average offense and a bottom 10 pitching staff get you? It sure as hell doesn't get you to 86 wins. I really don't think that there's any chance the Phillies go over this number. This is one of my favorite season win total unders of the season. And yeah, you could make the argument. You could say that maybe I'm a little bit jaded because I, you know, liked the Phillies a little bit last year and they came nowhere close. But I like to think that I look at every season independently, looking at some of those suggestions, some of those signs of regression, things of that sort. And what I see here with these Phillies team is I don't see upside. I see a team that has a low ceiling. I see a team that has a reasonable floor. I don't think they lose 100 games or anything crazy like that. But I just don't see a ceiling for this Phillies team. I just don't see them getting into the mid-80s in wins. Not when I like the Mets. Not when I like the Braves. Not when you've got the reigning World Series champion Nationals here. Somebody has to lose in this division. And I don't think that the Marlins are that only somebody. The Phillies were lucky to be an 81-81 team last year. Lucky. They didn't add much. And in fact, I could say that some areas of the team are even worse. So the Phillies under 85.5, one of my favorite season win total unders here for the upcoming 2020 season. Finally, the Washington Nationals, 90.5, the season win total for them. As we know, they slayed that playoff dragon last year. They won their first playoff series in franchise history and then parlayed that all the way through the World Series. They went on their own money line rollover, which we'll talk about in the next segment, talking some college basketball with Ralph Michaels. 74-38 over their last 112 games for the Nationals. That was a pace of 107 wins. You know who won 107 games last year? The Houston Astros, who lost to the Nationals in the World Series. The thing about it for the Nationals is this. Not much player movement this offseason. And the one big move was losing Anthony Rendon. Massive loss. Huge loss for the Nationals. This was a top 10 offense with him. And in fact, in the bottom part of the top 10, they were 8th or 9th or so in a lot of key offensive categories. So their best offensive player is gone. From an offense that crept into the top 10 with a career year from Howie Kendrick, with a big year from Juan Soto, who could continue to play very, very well. That certainly is a possibility. He could just be a breakout candidate and cement himself as a top 10 player this year. But I don't think that they're going to stay in the top 10 without Rendon. That would require a big leap from Soto, maybe a leap from a guy like Trey Turner, something like that. I think this could be an offense that rates in the 10 to 15 range. Now, last year, 7th in FIP, 11th in XFIP, with Max Scherzer, with Steven Strasburg, with Patrick Corbin, I'm worried about this Nationals pitching staff. You know, the World Series hangover is not just a narrative. It's not just something drummed up by, you know, mainstream media, something like that. Where the World Series hangover comes in is that it is hard to win the World Series. You've got to play an extra month of baseball. And this Nationals team last year, which got off to that 19-31 start, they effectively played 6 months worth of postseason baseball, at least 5 months worth of postseason baseball. They played 17 of the possible 20 games in the playoffs. They played the one wild card game, went 5 in the DS, 4 in the CS because they swept the Cardinals, and then 7 in the World Series. So they played 17 extra games in the month of October, after going on this torrid run to even get back into the playoff picture and then be the wild card team. Steven Strasburg threw 180 innings for the first time since 2014, went over 200, in fact, and threw 36 more innings in the playoffs. That's a big-time workload for a guy that's had a lot of injury problems and considerations throughout his career. Max Scherzer last season, finally showing some signs of wear and tear. He's been an absolute workhorse. Most innings pitched in baseball since 2014 going into last year. I believe he's second now to Justin Verlander because he missed some time last season. Patrick Corbin, back-to-back 200 innings for him. Had Tommy John not that long ago. That's where the World Series hangover comes in. It's not a narrative. It's not, oh, they got to the top and now they can't get back. It's not that. It's a hangover thing. You know, because you... Let's say that you expect to go to the playoffs, right? You expect to win the World Series. You do, but how often do you actually meet expectations? One team does it every year. You may play an extra 5 games or an extra 4 games, something like that. You may be done by October 11th or October 12th. You play until the end of October. That is a full month less of recovery time for you because you're not going to hit the ground running right away. You know, you're going to take some time. You're going to rest. You're going to go on vacations. You're going to spend some time with the family, stuff like that. The recovery time is where the World Series hangover comes in. I think that's really problematic for Scherzer, Strasburg, and Corbin. This is a top-heavy bullpen. Some older guys, too. Daniel Hudson, Sean Doolittle. They added Will Harris. These are all older guys. This is a top-heavy bullpen, lacking pitching depth, an older unit as well. I don't like a whole lot about the Nationals this season. And in fact, their season win total here, 90.5. Some places are down as low as 88.5. This one may end up being a play for me. I mean, they played at that torrid pace for so long last year, rode it right into the playoffs. There's real potential here for a World Series hangover, for a team that falls off. And furthermore, They won 93 games last year playing with their hair on fire for 112 games. They don't have Anthony Rendon anymore. This is not as good of a team for 2020. Even if Juan Soto takes that leap, and he could, this is not as good of a team as the one that just won the World Series. So I'm looking under Washington Nationals here, 90.5, and this one may end up being a bet for me as well. So there you go. There's the Five and Fly segment. We'll do the National League Central coming up here on Thursday's edition of the show. Real quickly, run through some spring training injury updates for you. Aaron Hicks progressing, is in his return from Tommy John surgery. Finally, some good news for the Yankees. He's looking at a June or July return. We already know Luis Severino is out. James Paxton is out. I actually got some clarification. It's 68 games that Domingo Herman will miss. So it's not the whole first half, but missing 68 games, missing about 12 or 13 starts there for the Yankees. So Herman effectively missing about 40% of the season. Giancarlo Stanton, still an injury risk. He's back to work now in spring training. But keep an eye on the Yankees, man. Their season win total, very, very high. Got some injury considerations already. Tough to bet it over with that team, to say the least. Griffin Canning went for an MRI for the Angels. He's got UCL damage. He's going to start the season on the injured list. Who knows what happens beyond that? This is already starting up for the Angels. This is always my concern with the Angels. They just don't stay healthy. For one reason or another, they don't stay healthy. Now Griffin Canning on the shelf. Again, already early in the process, their pitching staff, their starting pitching in particular, starting to take a pretty big hit. That is very worrisome to me. As a team where I was on the fence about their season win total anyway, leaned over for the guide, but if they start getting some more cluster injuries here, that will become an under situation for me. Cortisone shot for Blake Snell. Obviously, I don't love this one, as I love the Tampa Bay Rays. Bet their season win total over. Like them to win the division. Like them as a World Series long shot. Blake Snell says he's okay. We'll see. Obviously, elbows and shoulders, things that you're very concerned about at this time of the year. But Blake Snell says he's all right. We'll see if that winds up being the case. Alex Verdugo not yet swinging a bat for Boston. Boston will already be without Chris Sale at the start of the year, as we know. Verdugo, you'd like to see some of that offensive upside out there, but you know what? If I'm the Red Sox right now, I consider tanking. I really, truly do. You know, trade JD Martinez the first chance you get, if you get that opportunity. You know, Eduardo Rodriguez already dealing with some knee stuff in spring training. The Red Sox, I see no redeeming qualities with this team, and they might as well just tank it and see what kind of draft player they can get. Mike Leake may miss opening day. That's good news for our Arizona Diamondbacks over bet. Fractured wrist for him, and it's his non-pitching wrist. Otherwise, he'd be out probably for the year. But you know, Arizona doesn't have a ton of starting pitching options, but the ones that they have probably are a good bit better than Mike Leake. Setback for Andrew McCutchen, like the Phillies under a lot, as I mentioned already. Looks like he may miss all of April as he recovers from a torn ACL. And then finally, Stephen Piscotty of the Oakland A's. Intercostal issue for him. Probably looking at late April now with his return. Again, watch out for those guys taking more swings, guys pitching more. Obliques and intercostals going to be month and a half long things now at this point in time. Like I said, we'll do the Bettors Box on Thursday. We'll do our Five and Fly segment for the National League Central. Adam at bangthebook.com for the Bettors Box notes, and I will send out Thursday's notes with today's update for those that are already on the mailing list. Make sure you check out the guide over at bangthebook.com in PDF form, or if you want to, you can buy it over on Amazon for $4.99. Very proud of that product. A lot of good information in it, to say the least. Got a lot of positive feedback on it as well. So check out that guide over on Amazon or in PDF form over at bangthebook.com. With that, we transition over to the college basketball side of things and bring on professional handicapper Ralph Michaels from wagertalk.com. Ralph, how's it going today, man?
Doing great, Adam. It was great to see you out here in Vegas. You know, it's nice to see the hype that your baseball guide's getting and the respect you get from the media people out here. It really is a nod to the hard work and the dedication you put into it.
Well, I definitely appreciate that, man. It was great to see you last week as well. And obviously, this isn't Kyle Hunter, but Kyle Hunter out sick here on today's show. But we bring Ralph back. Great to get him back on the show. It's been a little while here. We're going to talk about some of the conference tournaments that start here this week, some of the conference tournament betting strategies, things of that sort. And Ralph, I guess we'll start with that because the postseason begins on Tuesday night. Atlantic Sun, Big South, Horizon League, and the Patriot League. What's different about betting these conference tournament games as opposed to betting regular season games?
Well, I think you're going to find that I like betting big dogs, especially early. Those teams that have had losing streaks going into the conference tournaments, because number one, it's a restart of the season for them. Number two, you have to remember that these teams are playing back-to-back-to-back days very often. And if you get that big lead, are you resting? Are you pooling your starters? Are you playing your bench? Are you going deeper into your bench to get some more depth moving forward? So the mindset is quite a bit different, handicapping with a lead and for those underdogs that continue to give 100% effort to the final buzzer.
So again, I mean, this is a one-shot deal for a lot of these teams here, especially these early conference tournaments, the A-Sun, Big South, Patriot, Horizon, Ohio Valley, Northeast. The West Coast is not going to be a one-bid league this year. The Missouri Valley will be a one-bid league as well. So you got one shot here in a lot of these early conference tournaments. So do you feel like you can still handicap motivation even though there's only one bid available?
I don't. Yeah, I think you're handicapping it completely different. When you have conference tournaments and when you have the NCAA tournament, I think you're not handicapping motivation. That's quite a bit different in the NIT, where I think motivation in the early games is one of the most important factors handicapping some of those smaller conferences for teams that are disappointed in the tournament they're in.
All right, so let's take a look here at some of these conference tournaments specifically, and we start with the Atlantic Sun tournament. And unfortunately here, the sports book's pretty slow to react here on Monday morning. We don't have odds for most of these. The only book I've got odds for is the Circa for the Horizon League tournament. Don't have anything other than that. So we'll try to do the best we can here with some strategy and some of the things that we're looking at here. But in the A-Sun, Liberty is your top seed, your overwhelming tournament favorite once we get numbers posted everywhere. Even though Liberty and North Florida tied with identical 13-3 records, and North Florida, in fact, actually beat Liberty once out of their two meetings. But this looks like it's Liberty's tournament to lose. And also, too, there's a different handicapping strategy with these tournaments because all of these games are at campus sites. So you have to factor home court advantage into the equation.
And I think home court advantage for the tournaments is even bigger than in the regular season. Now, even though you're having to give some of your seats up and some of the conferences, you know, you have to give seats to each of the schools. I think there's the familiarity, the added edge, the crowd, be it not as large as a regular crowd. But, you know, when you're playing these back-to-backs, you have to remember college kids are accustomed to this. They're going on the road and they're leaving that night or they're leaving first thing in the morning. Now these kids are staying in a different setting. It's the tournament type setting that some of them played in November, but it's not a tournament type setting because you're prepping for those next teams. So I actually give the coaches a little bit of a higher edge than I do when I have my coaching ratings. And I give the home court edge for those teams having it a little higher as well.
No, that makes a whole lot of sense here. And again, I mean, Liberty last year won this conference tournament. In fact, if you remember, they went on the road to Lipscomb and won this conference tournament. That was a very, very good Lipscomb team last year. The 2018 Lipscomb team was also very good. This year, Lipscomb draws the 3 seed because they had a higher net rating than Stetson. Stetson, one of the other teams that beat Liberty here over the course of the season. And Lipscomb just did it in the regular season finale. But Ralph, as you look up and down this conference here, is there any way you could, you know, look at anybody other than Liberty to win this thing?
Yeah. Again, I am not giving it to Liberty because I do like this North Florida squad. You know, you have one of the most efficient offenses in the country. Their problem is defense, but a lot of times you can live by the defense. I like the way they finished going down the stretch, winning 8 of their last 9. You look at the Lipscomb game they played on the road, they lost 85-73, and it was a game that they shot very poorly, one of their worst shooting games. So, you know, in the second meeting when they played Liberty, they beat Liberty at home 71-70, then they lose by 5. I give North Florida a shot, and a lot of times, Adam, I think it's actually good to talk about play these games through in your head before you see the odds. Because even handicapping for 35 years, there's times you look at the odds and that sways your opinions on these games, who you really think might be able to win. So, you know, I do like going through these, just like much like I do bowl games. I like going through all the bowl games, making my lines before they come out, because then you don't have that misconception or again, think this team is this big of a favorite. Do I really think this dog has a live shot?
You know, and there are some other teams that we'll talk about here a little bit with some of these smaller conference tournaments that fall into this same boat. But a team like North Florida, as you mentioned, very good offensively, not good defensively at all. You're going to have a lot of teams like a, I'm trying to think here off the top of my head, but you're going to have a lot of teams here that, you know, rate very well defensively, but not as well offensively. In a conference tournament format like this, are you kind of leaning towards the offense over the defense or vice versa?
I usually lean defense, but if I'm going to take, and North Florida is not a flyer by any means, they're going to be the second favorite, but I like taking teams that are 3-point heavy, and they shot 38% from 3-point, a league best. And, you know, I'm going to go back and if people remember back in December or the end of November, when Michigan got hot and beat Gonzaga and went through their run, what happened? They got on fire from three. And North Florida, I like those teams in the tournament that can shoot the three well, can win on the road, and has the ability to get hot from three-point land.
All right, so we take a look at another conference tournament here. This is another very, very small conference, the Big South Conference Tournament. This one also starts on Tuesday night. The bottom six seeds play. They all play on campus sites. You've got High Point at USC Upstate, Campbell at UNC Asheville, Presbyterian at Charleston Southern. Thursday, the quarterfinals begin. Those are all held at Radford's campus because they are the number one seed. Same thing with the semifinals. Then the championship game on Sunday, March 8th, played at the home site of the highest seed, which if Radford winds up holding up, that's where the game will be played. If not, it could very well be in Rock Hill, South Carolina at Winthrop, something like that. But Radford and Winthrop tied with 15-3 records. Way to go to the second tiebreaker for Radford to be the number one seed. Winthrop is the number two here. And those are the two best teams in this conference. But Gardner-Webb kind of lurking, Campbell sort of lurking after that. Then a bunch of bottom 50 caliber teams here in the Big South. So as you sort of handicap through this tournament, Ralph, you know, who do you kind of have your eye on as probably the team to win this thing?
Well, having the home edge, you know, as I just said, I give the edge. So I expect Radford to win this. But, you know, my dark horse would be Gardner-Webb. You know, you lost who was the preseason player of the year for Perez for multiple games. If he can come back and can get healthy and start playing, you know, I don't know on his status. I haven't been able to get an update on him, but you know, they're certainly a team that I look at and was leaning forward. You know, the other team down the stretch, you know, Longwood finished well. They're the best defensive team. And you know, as I said, there's certain times I like offense with the three, but if Longwood could get any type of shooting, you know, that is a team that finished 7-3 down the stretch of the last 10 games. And, you know, one thing I want to point out, Adam, you and I talk about BartTorvik.com often. And when I get into these tournaments, a couple things I look at is I go in, and if you go into BartTorvik, you can put a start date on the top. So I go back and I look at what these teams did their last 10 games. I go back to the end of January, punch them in. You see their offensive and defensive efficiencies. And then I also get a stat fox because they're the easiest to pull it down and pull down all the road stats for them. So you look at how the teams did on the road offensively and defensively, point per game and rebounds. And those are two things I think are very vital when you're breaking down these conferences, information-wise, to have it at your fingertips.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, BartTorvik is great, especially because you kind of get those trend lines with some of the visuals that he has there. And you look at a team like Gardner-Webb here. They've won six of the last seven. They beat Winthrop at home. They beat Radford on the road in a game that Radford, you know, I mean, look, this was a team going for the number one seed there on Saturday, and maybe they already had it locked up. I'd have to go back and double check that. But so Gardner-Webb beat those two teams, the top two seeds here, over the last month or so. went to triple overtime in a 4-point loss at Winthrop. And that was 3 days after losing at home by 3 to Radford. So Gardner-Webb split the meetings with the top two seeds, and the losses were nothing to scoff at either. And this, of course, a Gardner-Webb team that won this conference tournament last year with the same head coach in Tim Kraft. And last year they were a 10-6 team in the regular season in conference play, or 10-8, I believe, actually. This year they were 11-7. So Gardner-Webb, not a bad bet here. Obviously, we want to see what this price looks like when the odds come out, but that may be one that you want to keep an eye on there in the Big South, even though a lot of people will say it will likely come down to Radford and Winthrop, and it could, but Gardner-Webb, a team with some upside there coming out of that three-seed line. Real quick, I want to circle back to the Atlantic Sun Conference Tournament because Circus Sports actually did post those A-Sun Conference Tournament odds here. Liberty is minus 350, North Florida plus 425, Lipscomb plus 2,200, North Alabama 50-1, same thing with Jacksonville, and then on down from there. So Liberty minus 350 here with North Florida plus 425. And Ralph, I got to say, I don't even know if Liberty's as high as minus 350 in a potential championship game against North Florida.
Oh, I agree with that. I think there's certainly value there with North Florida. You know, North Florida is a team with, you know, 20 wins on the season. They have one go-to player. Kadir Rosa is a senior that can light it up for him. When you have a senior point guard who is your best player, I completely think there's value with the Ospreys.
All right, so let's go to the Horizon League here, where we've got Wright State, the minus 110 favorite out at Circa. At least that was as of yesterday. Northern Kentucky, plus 220. Green Bay, 10-1. Illinois, Chicago, 11-1. Nobody else in this conference really has a great chance. Everybody else, 35-1 or higher. But when we look at the Horizon, a couple of interesting differences for this season. The first is that they're going to reseed in the first and second round, or in the second round. So what that's going to do potentially is take away a long shot getting to the finals, because the last 2 years, we've seen long shots get to the finals in the Horizon League tournament. Last year, we saw Cleveland State get there as an 8 seed. They lost to Wright State. In 2017, Milwaukee made the finals as a 10 seed. So the Horizon League really trying to make a concerted effort here to put their best foot forward, get one of their two best teams into the conference tournament. The second interesting wrinkle here, and Rolf, we could talk about this for a couple of minutes, is that the first round games are at campus sites. The quarterfinal games are at campus sites, but the semifinal games and the championship games at Indiana Farmers Coliseum. This is the home floor of IUPUI, who is the bottom seed in this conference. But you know, when you get late into these conference tournaments here, these are sites that these teams generally don't play at too often. That can have a big impact on shooting numbers, totals, and things like that.
It does, but you know, I love the way the Horizon League does it and give their 1 and 2 a double bye. You know, their the number 3 team gets a single bye. So, you know, the 3 teams going to play the next highest on day 2. So, you know, all you have to do is, if you're Wright State or you're Northern Kentucky, is win 2 games. And, you know, the question's going to come up, it's hard to beat a team 3 times. And, I certainly think that Wright State and Northern Kentucky, the way it's set up, will get there. Well, you know, for those that didn't pay attention, on the final day of the regular season, Wright State was playing for the title against Northern Kentucky, went into Northern Kentucky, wins that game 64-62. So I had to go to the database and I pulled out what teams do losing to an opponent twice if they have 20 or more wins. Northern Kentucky has 21 wins on the season. So you have a quality team that has dropped both of the first 2 meetings to an opponent. Going all the way back to 2010, the average line is only 2.7 in this situation, which you expect. You're a 20-win team. You have double revenge. 2.7 is the average line, and you're only 65-91 straight up, 41.7%. Against the spread, you're 74-79-3, 48.4%. So it's going to come up often in these conference tournaments about, It's tough to beat a team three times. Well, it's not if you're the better team. You know, it's tough to upset a team three times. That's certainly one thing. But to beat a team three times, teams do it 58.3% of the time.
Well, and I think something that's really interesting about this conference tournament, and maybe this is the reason why Wright State has had some success against Northern Kentucky, massive pace war between Wright State and Northern Kentucky. Wright State, you know, kind of a top 35 team in tempo. Northern Kentucky, a bottom 50 team in tempo. And that will be interesting because the way that this is currently set up, it looks like you probably end up seeing Northern Kentucky play Green Bay on Monday. Green Bay also likes to push the tempo, also likes to push the pace. So on one hand, you can say, okay, Northern Kentucky will have just played a game at a higher tempo. They're going to be more prepared for it, taking on Wright State in a potential championship game. But on the flip side, they may play two very up-tempo games back-to-back. That's not the Norse's style. They're not a great three-point shooting team. That could really work to their detriment here. I kind of like Wright State, even as a chalky play at minus 110, because like you said, they've only got to win two games. And even if they draw Illinois-Chicago, who is, you know, maybe the best defensive team in this conference, I still think their draw is a little bit easier.
Yeah, yeah. Again, I have Northern just slightly higher as far as defense goes, but you know, Wright State's right there as well. But I completely agree with you. Green Bay is number 8 in tempo as far as KenPom ratings go, and Wright State is number 32. For these kids to be running up and down that court back to back nights the way they are when they're not accustomed to it, I think that would be a clear play for me where I could see a live betting situation where if the game's tied at the half, I would clearly be on Wright State, or even if Wright State's down a few, as long as Wright State was able to control the tempo and get enough shots off, then I'd be looking to play Wright State in the second half.
Well, that's another excellent talking point here. You know, I mean, obviously, you know, with clients, you can't necessarily, you know, sell them second half plays. It's just such a small window. But personally, with betting your bankroll, you know, these conference tournaments are a unique animal because, as we've said, you play back-to-backs or you play, you know, three games in 5 days, depending on how the conference tournament is set up. Live betting, second half betting, tons of opportunities for that here at this time of the year.
Yeah, and you have to remember, Northern Kentucky has three sophomores in their starting lineup, including a point guard. So, you know, you have a situation where is it surprising that, you know, down the stretch they went, 12-3, losses to Wright State, top three defense, Illinois, Chicago at home, top three defense, Wright State at home, top three defense. So I think when you're playing those tougher defenses and you have that sophomore, yeah, you know, Bryson Langdon's played a lot and he started most of this year, but he still is a first year starter. He didn't play at all last year. You know, he redshirted. So, you know, I look at it and I think there's value with Wright State at minus 110. Because of only having to play the two games, and just the better team, the best player on the court, no question, and the better coach. You know, you have to remember that Northern Kentucky is a first year under Darren Horn. He stayed home, obviously. He was an assistant there as the coach from last year. John Brandon went to Cincinnati, but you have a first year head coach coaching his first tournament. I think that's a negative as well.
All right. So another conference tournament that starts on Tuesday here. We've got four of them. Again, we already talked about the A-Sun, the Big South, the Horizon. Now we talk about the Patriot League. This is obviously going to be a one bid league, but you know what? We don't have any odds for this conference tournament, but it does look very, very interesting because usually we think Patriot League, we think Bucknell. They're not very good this year. In fact, you know, it's been kind of a struggle for them a little bit here of late. Colgate is the number one seed. American and BU tied with 12-6 conference records. American gets the 2 seed via tiebreakers. So BU is the 3 seed here. Army and Lafayette tied at 10-8, but Army won both head-to-head meetings. They're the 4 seed. All of these games on campus sites. This is not a conference tournament that reseeds. This is a pretty decent conference, though, where a lot of these teams are pretty interchangeable. A lot of these teams grade pretty equally. You think maybe we've got some value on somebody that's not the number one seed, Colgate?
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at, you know, the top team. There was no one that dominated down the stretch, as you said. Looking back at the last 10 games, American, Colgate, and Boston University were all 7-3. Loyola Maryland, Lafayette, Army were all 6-4. Lehigh was 5-5. So, you know, you add into that situation the home court edge. It's going to be big. And I look at the best defensive team. You know, the best defensive team is American, no question. The best offensive team is going to be Boston. I think Boston U has a shot the way he has them finished. You know, you played your normal tough schedule down the stretch. You look at how they finished, and they're like 9-3 their last 12. They lost to Colgate by 16. That was a game that just got away from them. Lafayette, a two-point loss. Lehigh, an overtime loss by 2 points. They've been in every game, and a team that I have circled that I'll look at. Don't know if I'll get to the window with them, but I certainly may be on them once or twice betting-wise.
One of them that I'll throw out here is actually Lafayette. And Lafayette is going to be a team where we talk about betting futures, but we also talk about money line rollovers. And I think the money line rollover, more often than not, going to be a better course of action for you because you're going to get a much bigger price than that initial futures investment. And also, too, the way you hedge a money line rollover is to simply stop betting it. You know, if you bet a future and that team gets to the championship game, well, you probably have to invest more money on the other side to make your hedge. Lafayette is the 5 seed. They are on the road at Army. That's going to be a pick'em type of situation there. But this Lafayette team, you know, they beat Boston University. They lost to BU by a point. They've played very, very well against Colgate. They actually beat Colgate twice in the regular season. Lafayette is very inconsistent, though. They've kind of played up to the superior competition, down to the inferior competition. So there is some worry in that, but that's why you take this money line rollover price, where if they beat Army, you roll that over into an underdog roll against Colgate. If they beat Colgate, you roll that over into an underdog roll against probably American or BU. With a money line rollover, you look for upside. You look for ceiling. You look for a team that can go out there and score you some of these big upsets. Lafayette's done it already over the course of the conference play season. So that's one that I'm kind of looking at here as far as this conference goes. I think probably Colgate or BU ultimately wins it, but Lafayette is kind of your risk-reward type of play.
Well, you know, you're looking at a team in Lafayette that, you know, has a sophomore point guard and then a lot of leadership in the middle, and you got multiple guys that can score. You're a team that shoots free throws very well. You shoot twos well. You don't shoot three wells, but that's fine. And, you know, two losses is the most you've had in back-to-back games all year. So can't argue with that play at all.
All right, so we go to Wednesday here where we've got three conference tournaments getting underway. We won't talk about the Northeastern Conference. I'll have a preview, actually, of all of these 32 conference tournaments over at bangthebook.com. But let's take a look at the Mountain West here, a conference where we've got a lot more household names, a conference that a lot of people are going to know a bit better than some of those low major leagues. I'm astonished that that this conference tournament starts on Wednesday, and we don't have any odds out for it yet. But what we do know for sure, Ralph, is that San Diego State will be the clear-cut favorite here.
They will, and, you know, we talked about San Diego State a lot during the end of the regular season, and I clearly thought it would help them to lose a game. I didn't think it was a positive thing to have an undefeated season. I didn't think it was a positive thing to have that win streak to try to carry over. So, you know, we saw them lose to UNLV, and no one's playing better ball in the country right now than UNLV down the stretch. Just amazing, losing their bigs and going to small ball and what they've done. But, you know, now UNLV, of course, hosts this tournament, as they always do. But, you know, you saw San Diego State lose to UNLV, struggle mightily to Colorado State, and then struggle mightily in the first half against Nevada. And then Malachi Flynn takes over, scores, I think, 35 in that game. They pull away the second half against Nevada, and now I think they're back. You know, this is the team that, yes, you want to win your tournament, And it's a situation where if you were undefeated at this point, and this is a little off topic, but if you were undefeated, I wouldn't want to win my tournament and be undefeated. That would just be the mindset I have. The other difference between this tournament and next week is if you are playing physical teams back to back to back to back games and you know you're in the tournament, I don't know if winning the tournament is that much of a priority for you. Obviously, this week it's different. I'm talking next week when we look at some of those other tournaments. And let's say you're the Big Ten and you're one of the top two seeds and you have to play Wisconsin and Michigan State and Purdue and you're going to get banged up three straight days. Hell, I'd rather lose in round two, take those extra days rest, still be a three seed, and be happy without having banged up. With that said, though, now they have the entire week of rest. Having lost to UNLV, I think, helps them have revenge if they face them again. Having beaten UNLV here in this setting gives them momentum. I would not bet against San Diego State in this tournament. But again, you're talking about a prohibitive favorite. And, you know, you're going to be playing Air Force or Fresno, no problem then. So you very well could have a second-round game against UNLV. I like Utah State to get to the finals. I think Utah State's playing as well as anyone. And if I can get Utah State, I'm looking ahead to the finals, and obviously it matters, you know, how well you're playing. But if I can get Utah State plus five or more down the stretch, I'd be happy to take them in the finals against San Diego State. And if I'm getting Utah State, if I think they're going to be a five-point dog in the finals and a significant favorite in the other games, you know, if I could get them plus 250 as far as the tournament goes, then I'd be looking at them.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, you got four games in 4 days here for the teams that have to play on Wednesday. Those are the 6 through 11 seeds. As you mentioned, this one at the Thomas and Mack out in Nevada, UNLV, with that home court advantage, but obviously these fan bases travel because, you know, why wouldn't you want to go to Las Vegas at this time of the year? The thing that's interesting, San Diego State here, since 2009, they've been in the finals of this conference tournament 9 times. They are only 3-6 straight up in those 9 games. So this is a team that makes a good tournament run, doesn't always finish it off. We'll see if they're able to do it here. I agree with you on Utah State because one of the things you're going to find in these conference tournaments, teams that had really high expectations and fell well short of them, they are supremely motivated to go out there and try and get that bid back that they feel like they lost. Utah State is that team. To me, they are the most dangerous team in this conference tournament. We'll see what the odds look like here once that one rolls around. Rolf, one more conference tournament I want to touch on with you here on today's show. That is the Ohio Valley Conference Tournament. This one is at the Ford Center in Evansville, Indiana. The top 8 teams qualify for this one. Belmont, your number 1 seed. Murray State, your number 2 seed. Austin Peay, your number 3 seed. Eastern Kentucky, the 4 seed, went 12-6 in conference play. But very, very top-heavy conference tournament here with Belmont, Murray State, and then Austin Peay. So we don't have odds for this one out yet, but how are you kind of stack ranking those 3 teams?
I mean, you want to talk about 3 teams that battled out the entire year between, I mean, if you guys didn't follow the Ohio Valley, between Belmont and Murray State and Austin Peay, Murray State's won it, what, 3 straight years now? And, you know, again, you have Belmont with a first-year head coach, and I see Murray State, to me, as the team that I am going to bet. If Belmont comes favored, I am definitely taking Murray State in the number 2 spot. You have, you know, when you're all conference, your all conference teams are basically going to be Belmont, Murray State, and Austin Peay, your top 5 guys in the conference. You got multiple players with Belmont, with Murphy and Musinski, and Murray State, of course, Tevin Brown and KJ Williams are just dynamite. I'm going to go with the Racers to win for a 4th straight time. And I normally don't like taking teams with freshman guards. And, you know, they have Carter and Smith, 2 freshmen that play often and split the point. But, you know, and 30 games in, you're not really a freshman. even in their losses, you know, to me, they held serve at home. That's what you do. A very good team wins at home. You lose on the road and you lose close games. A 7-point loss to Belmont, nothing wrong with that. A 3-point loss to Austin Peay, nothing wrong with that. And a 3-point loss to Eastern Illinois back on February 20th. So Murray State for me. And then, you know, depending how far, I might take a flyer on Eastern Kentucky. Again, just because their uniqueness of being one of the fastest paced teams, the hecticness they bring, you know, their top 10 in the country as far as tempo goes. The only other fast team, there's only two teams in the top 90 with tempo in the Ohio Valley, Belmont and Eastern Kentucky. So it sets those two apart. But I'm going to go with the best defense, Murray State, and with the been there, done that, and have won, I believe, 3 straight. This will make it 4 straight.
Yeah, this one would be the 3rd straight for them. Jacksonville State won in 2017. That was a Murray State team in 2017. Only went 8-8 in conference play. So a rare down year for the Racers. They have won back-to-back here, though, as they are going for a 3rd straight one this year. What's interesting about this conference tournament, again, the double bye for the top 2 seeds. So Belmont and Murray State each only have to win 2 games. Austin Peay has to play Thursday night. Then they'd likely run into Murray State if they win that game. So that makes it really tough for Austin Peay. And again, they're one of those money line rollover candidates where, yeah, they're going to be a big favorite in the quarterfinal game, but they'll be a dog to Murray State and they'll be a dog to Belmont in all likelihood here. So maybe an Austin Peay money line rollover going to be a better option than the straight futures price, but should be a good one there in Evansville. It was a good one on today's segment with Rolf Michaels, professional handicapper over at wagertalk.com. Rolf, great to get you back on the show here, man. What's going on over at the website right now?
Well, you know, it's a $9 Monday. Every package is only $9. And Tuesday is a great way for you to try a capper. If you haven't sinned, we have the main capper on Tuesdays, $2. So I'll have a lot of March Madness information up there. The NBA stat sheet goes up daily, which breaks down the NBA over the last 2 weeks. And I'll, of course, be doing the first pitch, that daily MLB newsletter with 2 full pages on every game. That'll get put out daily, and it's always free on my homepage at wagertalk.com.
Once again, make sure you follow Rolf on Twitter at CalSportsLV and check out his work over at wagertalk.com. Rolf, always a pleasure, man. Thank you so much for chatting with me, and we'll talk to you again hopefully real soon.
Thanks, Adam. Appreciate it.
There you go. There's Rolf Michaels, professional handicapper over at wagertalk.com at CalSportsLV. On Twitter. Coming up on our Tuesday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll chat with Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. We'll talk some NHL, we'll talk some golf, we'll talk probably some college basketball, and a little bit of NASCAR on that Jack of All Trades segment. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.